Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. I'm Monster B, and on the phone today with me is Peter64 from the Linux Cranks.
G'day, how you doing?
And Claw2 is going to join us later. He's having a coffee and a waffle at IHOP.
Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about today?
Well, we're going to cover the availability of Linux media centers. And I think we've found about, what, 7 of them.
So you want to start it off with Myth TV?
Yeah, when you look at Myth TV, it's purely a PVR to start off with. And then once you get it installed in that, and you have the EPG up, okay, it really is a brilliant PVR. But you start to throw these plugins, and all of a sudden the usability just skyrockets. The amount of plugins you can get from Myth TV is just unbelievable. And of course, everyone knows about Myth Video and that. Like, and your mandatory Myth weather, everyone seems to chuck in a weather plugin, don't they, in all of these applications. But some of the more interesting ones, and one in particular I found interesting, and they've only just put it in, is Myth ZoneMinder. And what that does is, if you actually do have ZoneMinder, which is the surveillance television, CCD, for your home or your business or whatever, Myth now has a plugin for that, so you can access all your surveillance cameras as well. And that's only just been put in the last couple of months. I don't know when it actually came in. There's Myth Roast, which I'm taking since you can do a bloody... It must be like a recipe or something. So, yes, Blakes have never, ever played with Myth TV, besides, Phil, you did, Myth Buntu, did you?
Yeah, Myth Buntu, I just tried it out on a live CD. It seemed pretty nice. One thing I was... Because I want to build an actual box one of these days, just for Myth TV, but is there any free program guides, or is it all like a paid service?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mention that, because from my understanding in America, yeah, now they have to, you've got to pay $25 a year or something. In Australia, I've always used a thing called Shepherd, which is just, I think it's written in Python, but don't quote me on that. It goes to a couple of the websites for the major TV companies, and it pulls down the data. Now, one of them, one of the sites it actually gets them for is, not Citizen, Thomas, what I'm looking for, fellas. It's a community-based thing where people continually update it and do it, and the other one is on one of the major television companies, and it pulls it down from there. And by using both sources, it makes a pretty good electronic programming guide. But also in Australia now, all digital TV services broadcast the electronic programming guide over the air. Now, because I've had Myth set up running for so long, pulling the data off the internet, I haven't bothered switching it over now to pull it just purely from the digital TV stream. But I would imagine the stream that they send over the airways is going to be actually better, because it'll be more up to date.
That's pretty nice. So you having like a regular antenna for this? So you get your television from like high definition over the airwaves?
Yeah, that's right. In Australia, the five major channels broadcast the standard definition and high definition. Pretty well just a standard aerial. Like, we live a fair way away from the actual transmitter. But one thing visual too. Who's that?
There's only the three of us.
Yeah. Yeah, like someone else talks.
That is you.
Yeah. What? Must have been my own accent scared me. Anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's just over the airways. And with Myth TV, what I also did was, obviously, with the OSTAR, which is our satellite TV, we have a decoder box, and from the decoder box, I just put a signal in through one of the S-Video, I actually use component in, and I can record satellite TV as well. But one thing I found out about that is you don't bother recording satellite telly, because it's repeated that many times anyway. Like, there's no need to do it, but it certainly can be done if you want it. So, yeah, that's virtually Myth TV. And like I said, it's the poster boy of Linux Media Center scene.
And so MIPS, I mean, it kind of aggregates not only television, but, I mean, as long as you've got the plugins, you can aggregate practically anything else, like weather, your own media, your local media, right? Music and pictures and stuff like that.
Yeah, with the players. I mean, they've got Apple trailers. You can do the Apple trailers. You can do a MIPS browser. MIPS telephone, that's a SIP phone client. I mean, these are things I've never done. Because, honestly, if I want to use a browser, I'm not going to sit and watch it on a bloody at the lounge room on a plasma screen. I'm going to go up and jump on my monitor if I want to read that. MIPSflix, I think MIPSflix is the one that will give you your local theatre, what's playing all around in your local theatre. Once again, I don't use this because I'd imagine it would be very good for Americans, but yeah, not much point where I live, I'm afraid. Plugins, say, you know, you can add to YouTube easy, just watch movies there, whatever you'd want to do. Like hundreds of plugins. When I say hundreds, not quite hundreds, but there's also official and unofficial plugins as well. And I've never really looked at all the unofficial plugins.
And so let me ask you this. Does MIPS also aggregate, like Monster B's last episode on, like, the Media Center, you know, his interview with that guy from the MCE, does MIPS do that kind of thing as well? Like, can it control, like, home automation kind of stuff?
Not home automation. It's purely media.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, like, it's got MIPS News for RSS feeds to pull in all your news streams, all that sort of stuff. But no, that's purely... When you start to talk about Linux MCE, that goes really beyond the media centres that the typical person thinks is a media centre.
Right.
I mean, listen to Monster D's interview if you want to know about Linux MCE. It got me keen to use it again. But with MIPS TV too, but like you said, Monster B, you installed using MIPS Ubuntu. It's interesting now, back when I first started playing with MIPS, it was about at the 0.18. Back then, I think the only thing around was Not MIPS, and I actually tried to use Not MIPS and didn't have much success with it, and I ended up going and using Zusa and installing it with that. Now they have all these things, like Fedora has one as well, Ubuntu. You interviewed a bloke on the Bad Apples about it.
Yeah, Fedora. It was on Fedora.
But I really think MIPS is now at the stage where you don't need those dedicated distributions for it. Because for me to set up MIPS TV in SUS, like, I can do it really no problem. It's not the setting up of MIPS TV, it's the setting up of Lurk. Like, to set up Lurk, you've got to be pretty dedicated to get it working with the infrared receiver, and then to sit down and write all the Lurk configuration files, and then and the ones for MIPS TV, you've got to do it for mPlayer as well, because mPlayer is what I use to watch in MIPS video. So that takes a long time to set them up. And like I said the other day in Linux Cranks, if that machine goes belly up, it would take me a hell of a long time to get it set back up. And I really should back up all those sort of configuration files. But to actually get MIPS TV up and running, I did it here the other day on Slackware when I was just talking to blokes in the IRC, and I said, okay, I'm going to try and get MIPS going in Slackware, and I had it going by the end of the day. So.
Yeah, but those dedicated ones, the dedicated ones are great in the appliance sense, where someone who might not really be that into the idea of going over to Linux entirely, yet they've still heard of this cool, geeky thing called MIPS. You know, I mean, that's a good way for them to get their feet wet and kind of, like, just pop in a disk and you know, it's up and running really, really fast.
Yeah, well, I tried
Freevo, which I don't know if that's technically based on MIPS or what, but they had a live CD, and I just popped that into my computer, and... Yeah, I couldn't try any of their, like, their television stuff because I don't have the card for it. but I used it as a media center for, you know, the evening while I was watching videos and stuff. And it was just so easy and so fast, and it was nice. It was cool.
Yeah, and it's cross-platform, too. Runs on OS X and Windows. I didn't realize they had a Windows client for Freebo. I haven't played around with Freebo back when I used to run Mandrake. It was probably the thing that started me in Linux was on Mandrake was that I saw Freebo actually ran on it. It was part of the distribution. It was packaged with it. Back on, it was Mandrake. I think by then it might have been Mandrake 10. And I did have a play down with it, but if I could be done.
Yeah, now that you mention it, I remember when I was booting up the live CD, seeing the I guess, Drake X or whatever their little bootloader stuff is. I remember that. Yeah, it ran really well, actually. I was impressed.
And it uses what Empire and Zion and FFmpeg too, for video playback and that, DivX. Yeah, I'm just wondering what's the difference between Freebo and Myth. They're both very similar. Obviously, a lot more development goes into Myth TV, I'd say, because it's recognised by a lot more people, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's certainly one of those ones that's worth looking at if you're going to set up a Linux Media Center.
What is Freebo based on?
Well, we think it's based on Mandrake.
Well, the live CD was definitely Mandriva Live. But in terms of, like, just building it up from scratch, I don't remember. I didn't look at those kinds of details for whatever reason.
But
they don't mention...
You'd be able to install it on any distribution, wouldn't you? I mean, that really, all these things are just a front end to something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well,
go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's not a terribly, attractive looking front end, but it was certainly very, very functional. Like, it wasn't sleek looking, you know, at least the live thing that I was trying. But it was very, very functional and very easy to get up and running. You know, I mean, I just popped it in and started using it right away. I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, one thing about all those things, in particular Myth TV, themeable. I mean, there's that many themes out there. The worst thing is deciding which one you want to use. Because every other day, there's just another one that's really good. I think Freebo, I went to the theme section, it only looks like there's one.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got. I didn't see a whole lot on their site about being able to skin it that much.
Yeah.
But it had all the like basic functions, you know, the photo gallery and the video and the music, and then, like I said, the TV recording, which I couldn't try, but everything else was working really nicely.
Yeah, so really, out of the seven that we looked at, that Freebo and Myth TV are two that do digital TV, or except tuner cards.
Yeah.
Linux MCE uses Myth as the PVR, and then the other, whatever it's left for, they're more or less, I suppose, media organizers, aren't they?
Yeah, which
they don't
for
actually...
some people is better.
Well, that's right. A lot of people want that these days, don't they? They're not interested in TV. They can download all the stuff they want off the internet or just, you know, watch movies, anything.
Yeah, I mean, I tried the other one that I tried was the Xbox Media Center, XBMC, which I guess obviously probably started for the Xbox, but now it's available again for Linux. It's available for Mac and Windows. The only problem I had with it really was that the Linux version, they only have like really just one way of distributing it, and that is through the Ubuntu personal package archive thing, the PPA thing. So I had to boot up into Linux, into Ubuntu, in order to install it easily. I mean, I could have gone and tried to do it from source, but I mean, that was too much to ask, I think, right? You know, just to try it out. But other than that, it's a really attractive and again, just very, very functional. I really liked it. I found it very intuitive. That was the first media center, or I guess what would it be called, media aggregator that I really tried ever. And it was really intuitive, though.
Yeah, one thing I did like, just trying to listen to how to play with it too, was it was easy to get to the detail controls, adjust brightness and contrast and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where Mid TV, you actually have to, for some reason, go into your settings and enable that you want picture control. Well, I don't know why that isn't just enabled to begin with. I don't know about Freevo. I can't remember if you had that sort of control.
I didn't stumble across it on Freevo.
Yeah, but to me, that, especially if you're going to watch these on a projector, and a lot of our viewing is done on the projector, and depending on the light, you want to be able to adjust your contrast and your picture, and even saturation a lot of times. And I like to have that handy, so it's nice, you know, quick to find. And this Xbox Media Center, very easy to find all those sort of settings.
Well, I think with that Xbox Media Center, everything was easy to find. It was just like, I mean, like I say, I've never really used anything like that before, but within one sitting, I was, you know, I found all the controls that I could have ever wanted. I was impressed with how attractive it was. It was like, it was something that I was looking at, and I was like, man, if I had a friend over right now and I fired this up, they would really, like, they would be, impressed enough to look at it and kind of enjoy it. It's a really nice-looking and functional thing. It's just they're not distributing it quite as easily as I think it could be distributed yet, but maybe that's forthcoming.
Yeah, and the only problem I had about this with it was every time I went in to watch a movie, well, when I exited back out of the movie, the main menu had gone completely white. There's like a ticker along the bottom of the menu. I can't remember what that used to display across there. But all I could do was make out that writing going across, and I had to exit the application and restart it for some reason.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
Yeah, and you said, well, you should file a bug report. And I said, I probably should. Anyway, I went over to the... And that's something we haven't discussed too, about documentation for all these sort of things and how easy it is to get help. But I went over to the IRC at Linux Media Center, whatever it was, and talked to a couple of blokes in there, and certainly the problem had been reported. I was using, it was an alpha version anyway, and they certainly knew about the problem but didn't know of any fix at the time. And that's the thing about all these things. Sorry?
I was just going to ask what you were using it on. I forget what version of Ubuntu.
It's the latest one, whatever that is. 8.8. What is it, 8.4? Hardy?
Yeah, like Hardy. So, and I was using it on Gutsy, so I wonder if that was a difference.
Yeah, well, yeah, it could be, because I was using the very latest alpha, whatever was in the repos.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, I was not, so.
I must admit, the first time, when I went over there and asked the question, the first question they asked me was, what version are you running? And I said, oh, hold on a second, because I didn't look when I installed it. And
sure.
The bloke said to me, well, who did you get to install it? And I felt like, hey, well, I did, mate, but I don't have time to read all this. But anyway. Just on documentation... So we want to discuss that now. We can come back and discuss that later. Right?
Well, the Xbox Media Center is not a PVR, though. It's just to play the media that you have on your hard drive or CDs or DVDs. You can't, like, actually capture anything from your television.
Correct.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a media aggregator. That's what they are. I mean, they all do exactly the same thing. And it's got the... the obligatory bloody weather plug-in, like all of them. Is obligatory the right word?
Yeah, I actually liked it. That impressed me too, actually. I was like, cool, weather. Not that I ever care about the weather, but it's nice to have.
No, I use a lot of it, and it seems that all of them have now. Now, the other one I looked at was Eliza or Eliza. And this one got, I've actually used this and run it for quite some time. This is the one where people come over to my house and they walk in and I put this up on the projector, and this is the one that they go, wow. Now, Kato, I know I discussed this with you, and you don't particularly like it because you think that it screams of Apple.
Yeah, the theme, I really don't like that theme at all. I don't find it intuitive either.
No, that was the other thing. Functionality is actually limited when you look at it. There's absolutely no picture control in it. The theme-wise, there's only really three themes, and they're all exactly the same. They just changed the couple of the icons. What does look impressive, though, is when you bring up a movie, you start watching a movie, then you can go back into the menu, and the movie will continue to play behind the menu. Now, that's one of those things where people go, wow, look at that. But really, what's the good for? I suppose you ask yourself.
It's good to wow your friends. Obviously,
well,
they're going for the eye candy and the like, look what I can do kind of thing. What I couldn't do with that is install it. I could not get Eliza to install and launch properly. And I tried it on a couple of systems. I was really surprised.
Yeah, well, actually, it's funny. I run Ubuntu on the laptop, and I had no trouble. And really, I really think for some reason it had a lot to do with having GNOME installed, and it seemed to go on no drama at all. Then I had it running back in version 3.something on my Zusa box. I upgraded to 3.5, don't pay the numbers, couldn't get it to run. I installed the latest version, and which is about 5.10, and it actually does now run under Zeus. I managed to get it running under Zeus 10.3. It eye candy-wise, out of all the things that we've reviewed, I really think that it's got the biggest wow factor. But that's a personal preference, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just what people are after, you know, like when they sit down and say, okay, now I want a media center sort of application. Are you doing it for yourself, or are you doing it to wow people? For me, honestly, it would be more for the wow factor, because when I watch videos, I just, you know, I play it from InPlayer in the command line, and that's how I use all my media, whether it's music or videos or whatever. So the only reason I would have, for instance, XBMC on my computer is for the rare occasion when someone's sitting over my shoulder and I want to show them that Linux is, you know, cool, just like everything else, and I would probably just fire that up so that they could see it. I don't think I'd use it myself.
Yeah, well, that raises an interesting question. All these things, really, when you look at them, you can look at them two different ways. You don't have the big widescreen flat panel telly and a sort of home theater set up with a projector and everything.
Correct.
And yeah, so typically M-Player, VLC, you want to look at the pictures, you bring up QView or whatever it's called. And certainly there's no need for anything like this, except it makes it convenient, doesn't it? That's the really only thing that they got going for them, is convenience. But if you're going to have them in your lounge room, you want to be able to operate them with a remote control, then and you want to be able to, you know, flick to each section really quick, then all of a sudden doing that with the keyboard sitting in your lap is not that cool.
Well,
it's not
right.
Coolness, is it? It's convenient. I pick up the Harmony remote control, push a button, it's up and running. So this is, I just get a lot of feedback here with this on myself. And it's throwing my timing out.
Well, you know what? When you are hearing feedback, I hear you breaking up a lot. That's what it sounds like on my end.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing too.
I wonder why.
I thought it was because I was loading up web pages, but I stopped, and then but it kept going.
Yeah, no, because I'm not doing anything on my end. I think it's just because you're in Australia, Peter. I mean, it's a
fear. Oh, it might be.
Like, it's just the bits or the packets are not getting here soon enough.
The other thing that we didn't mention was that Alicia uses the G-Streamer plugins. The ones we've talked about previously haven't used. You'd know a fair bit about them, Clark, too, wouldn't you? What that's all about?
Well, you know, I mean, the G-Streamer plugins have the advantage of, you know, understanding certain proprietary codecs a lot better than, you know, the other plugins like InPlayer, supposedly. I mean, honestly, I get by really well with InPlayer. But there have been occasions where I can't play something, and then if I install GStreamer, it'll play. So it kind of just, it's the usual story of the more plugins you have, or the more codecs you've got, you know, the more you are covered and the better luck you have. But I guess there's an advantage to GStreamer just on the, there's the whole infrastructure of GStreamer, and you can have other programs talking to GStreamer and stuff like that, and probably kind of have it integrated with each other. I don't know. I don't really use, I mean, obviously I haven't used the Elisa, so I'm not really too sure what kind of advantage it has.
But tell me, when I install Elisa and I install the GStreamer plugins, what's the difference between those ones and the ones, because you can go to GStreamer and purchase the plugins, can't you?
Yeah, so I mean, for us Americans, that's a big advantage, because if you are worried about like the CIA or the ATF knocking on your door because you're stealing codec information, if you bought it from them, then you know they've licensed it from the MPEG Society and all that other stuff.
Well, okay, so it's the ones I'm pulling off the repos for Ubuntu. They're exactly the same as the one I would go and purchase. There's no difference.
No, I don't think that's correct.
But they are different.
I think so. I could be wrong, honestly. That's a good question. I haven't really looked into that. You might be right. You might literally just be purchasing the... No, you know what? Because when you purchase... Yeah, but no, when you purchase it, I'm pretty sure you're purchasing, you know, specifically like the DVD decoding and stuff. But I could be wrong. I haven't looked into that sort of thing in a while.
Yeah, it was just something I always wondered. Like, interesting.
I mean, from what I understand, it's not even a concern for anyone out of the USA. That's what I've always heard.
Another one of those things that I did look at just quickly was Entertainer, which is similar with Myth in that you have to, you know, start the back end and then you go to the front end and all that. And I actually can get it to boot, but I couldn't find out how to add media to it. It kept on telling me to go to a certain tab, that I had no media in that particular folder or whatever, and I had to go and add it, and it told me where to go and add it, but when I looked for where it said to go, it wasn't there.
So is Entertainer another just a media aggregator, or is it a proper PDF?
No, it doesn't do the TV. It says it's in very early stages of being developed. That said, it was a high priority that it wanted to get digital TV in there. But the only thing that really stood out with this one was that it automatically went to the internet and downloaded like the metadata for CDs and movies and everything like that. But I didn't get that to work. That's just what it says in the feature list.
Surely others do that, though.
No, I was going to say, Myth TV, when you're on like Myth Video, or Myth Movie, whatever it's called, then it actually goes to the internet database and will pull down the information on that particular movie. Now, you have to manually go and do that. Whereas this thing says it automatically will go and fetch the data for you. So, now I don't know about Myth TV with music, because the sort of music I listen to is all old country and western, and I'm sure there's no metadata on the internet for that sort of stuff. And if I want to listen to music, I just want to listen to it. I don't want to read about it. But yeah, I'd imagine these all do it. Actually, Elisa doesn't do it from what I can tell. I couldn't find anywhere where you and tell it to go to the internet and pull down stuff. It's called metadata. That's what you call it, isn't it?
Yeah, you're talking about like the ID3 tags from like CDBB or something like that, like a database of all the song listings and the year and the author of the song and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, all that sort of stuff, yeah. And then for movies, it'll go through and tell you, like Myth TV will pull down, you know, the spiel that they give you, which is typically the same as on the back of a DVD box, and it tells you the year it was made and the producer and all that sort of stuff. And interesting, because it's pulling it from the Internet Movie Database, it also gives you the user rating in that, which I like in Myth TV as well. So this entertainer, it's one that you may want to keep an eye on. Documentation is virtually nil. I went to the frequently asked questions and there was only three of them. All they were, why did you create it? Does it support digital TV? And that's where they said, no, not yet, but that's a high priority. And this, like Elisa, is using the G-Streamer for playback. So, you know. But how many do we really need? I suppose that's a question. Choice is a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I keep getting told.
Yeah, and I think GStreamer has the advantage, too. I mean, it's got a lot of different, like, APIs that you can call. And I guess, in theory, you can do a lot of stuff with GStreamer. I mean, it's a very flexible system, I guess. So it sounds like Entertainer's trying to be more of a Myth sort of contender.
Yeah, I think what they might be trying to do, and this is only speculation on my part, is take the looks of, say, Lisa or whatever, and the functionality of Myth TV and maybe combine it, but we'll have to wait and see. Like the features, nothing stands out with the features. It's got the same RSS newsreader, weather, and themes, but there's just no themes available for it at the moment.
Yeah,
it's at point one beta. So that will sort of give you an understanding of what stage it's at the moment.
Pretty early.
Yeah.
So that would obviously not be for someone looking for a media center right now. It's more for like people who are interested in it, maybe want to help develop it or something.
Yeah, I was just going to say that maybe, for developers to go over and if they want to apply their skills. I don't know what they use to write it, but I'd imagine it's certainly pretty easy to find out, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would say on their wiki or something, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then Myth TV is still on beta, right?
Yeah, well, it's only at 0.21.
What is?
Myth TV is at 0.21. That's something that I don't understand that. Like, what does it have to do before it gets to the 0.1 release?
I think it's just up to the developers when they think that it's, you know, stable where they really want it to be.
But like I said, Myth TV in itself is really just the PVR. And then there's all the plugins that go with it, but they're not interested in the plugins, are they? The developers are interested in getting the PVR functionality to a stable, where it's stable, it will work, it runs, whatever.
Yeah,
then that would be a point. Yeah, then I just wonder why it's so low, that's all, at 0.21, because it just works. I mean, it's been working for ages. I suppose if you went and wrote all the documentation, it'd tell you why it's only at 0.21, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it would tell you what they want to have in there that isn't there yet, or, you know, problems that they feel that they have.
All the bugs in that, yeah.
But when it comes down to it, Myth TV is like the real winner here.
Yeah, I mean, if you want a fully featured, very functional Linux media center, then, and I know you could get a bit of the Barney and the Pub over this, but definitely Myth TV is it. And the others have a hell of a long way to go to catch up. If you purely interested in looks, then I would say go with Elisa, but that's a personal thing, as you know, because Fatu, I think, would certainly disagree with that, and I could almost guess his choice. Like,
yeah, I mean, I think both of you guys are kind of wrong. Myth is cool, Myth is great and stuff, and I'm intrigued as anyone by it, but like, I think there's probably a segment of people out there, or just me, that doesn't need, you know, all that Myth functionality. They just want something to play some media in and kind of a nice interface to access all the media that they have on their hard drive. And for that, like in terms of ease of installation, intuitiveness, and looks, I'm going with XVNC.
Well, what?
Sorry, Bill.
No, I was just going to say, Boxy, when it comes out, it's based on the Xbox Media Center. It has all the same features except for it's social networking where you can share your media with other people.
That's cool. Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, I signed up like 2 weeks ago to download it because it's invites only, and I still haven't heard nothing from them.
Bummer.
Yeah.
But that feature you just stated, where it's got the social networking aspect, that's the one thing that may set this apart from all the others. It's something that the others don't offer.
Yeah, I really like that idea. That sounds pretty neat to be able to share media, or, you know, I guess it could be used in the wrong way, but...
But it's not really to share media, is it? It's that's right. I've watched this movie, and say, me and you must have been, we often talk to the IRC and we say, oh, have you seen this movie? Well, we seem to have similar tastes. So I would have you as one of my friends, and that way I could look and I might want to watch a movie today, and I don't know what I want to watch. I can bring up this Boxy with its social networking thing and say, okay, Monster B's just watched this movie. He said it's really good, so I'll sit and watch that. And that's the way I understand this works.
Oh, okay.
It's not actually sharing the movie. It's just, it's like Twitter for cool.
For media.
That's something. Yeah.
Yeah, really. Yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. I would definitely use that, I think, honestly.
Oh, yeah, it is, because I know a couple of my mates up in Canberra. Half the emails we send each other are, you know, it's what we pulled down off the internet and, you know, telling each other it's worth getting. And this is just the sort of automated thing of that is. But,
that way you don't have to actually talk to your friends as much.
Nah, that's right, and I don't want to. I didn't move here so I could talk to people.
Right.
I live in the middle of nowhere because I hate people.
Now, on Myth TV, though, you can actually share the stuff, though, right? Through the web interface?
That's one thing that we did, actually, didn't we?
That
you were able to log on to my Myth machine. And for those who don't know that I live in Australia and Monster B lives all the way over in America, but he was able to get on to my Myth box via Myth Web and go through and have a look at all my recordings. I think you could look at all the movies I had and
that's
start watching
cool.
a recording. I think it converted it to Flash, didn't it? So you could watch it in the Myth Web browser.
Yep. Worked really nice, too. It took like, probably because we're so far away, it took like 7 minutes to actually buffer the video, but it worked good.
Wow,
well, that's probably it's probably got a lot to do with my upstream too is pretty slow. I mean, I certainly don't have the speeds that use blokes get, and if I did, it would have been a hell of a lot better than that.
Yeah, but I mean, 7 minutes wasn't bad either, because
7 minutes is not bad at all.
Yeah, I played the show for, like, you know, just to test it out, like 15 minutes, and there wasn't one hiccup. I mean, it just nice and smooth.
Yeah, MythWeb's pretty good. I actually don't use it enough, but I suppose I don't have a lot of need to use this.
So he's got Myth and Myth Web plugin. You basically, you're your own YouTube or Hulu.com or something, right? I mean, because you can serve media through the web to any place.
Yeah, that's right. Anyone you want. I mean, you set up, you've got to set up with the password, or well, you don't. Like, I didn't have a password on mine. Yeah. But the other thing with Myth Web, too, is, I did
you and passwords,
night.
Man. You just aren't going to put a password on anything, are you?
I couldn't get stuff. But also with Myth Web, Say if you go away, you can log into your MythBox and set up a recording too, just over the internet, just in case you forgot to record something.
So really that's the main reason for that plug-in, is if you're at work or away from the house and you want to fire up the laptop to make sure you set the recording for something, that's the main purpose for it, right?
Yeah, well, I think that was the original. I don't recall the when I first installed MythWeb that you could do much else than just, you know, have a look at the EPG data and then set up a recording. But now it seems to do a hell of a lot of stuff. You can change heaps of settings. You can really stuff your MythBox up too, because all the settings are in there now. And I don't recall that they used to be in there either.
See, that's the selling point for me. The web interface, all the plugins, and the themes, because I'm looking at the themes page right now, and there's probably like 50 themes on there.
Yeah, and for everyone on there, there's another two or three out on the internet if you went looking that you'd find.
Now, you said you installed it on Slackware. What did you download? Just like one, is it just one tarball, or is it a bunch of applications you got to put together?
No, actually, that was the only thing with doing it on Slack. When I do it on Zeus or Ubuntu or whatever, say you've got a back end already running, like I do in the lounge room, then on my other computers, all I want to do is install front ends. Now, what's that Slackware site called, Klaatu?
Slack Build.
Builds. Yeah, okay. So, with Zeus or Ubuntu, you can just go and install a front end on any machine. With Slackware, you don't have the choice. You had the choice of installing MythTV, which installed a back end as well as your front end. Then instead of just doing individual plugins, there was just another package that you pulled down, and that gave you, like MythVideo and all, and MythWeather. You couldn't pull them down individually. It was the main plugins all put into one package. Yeah, and that was the Slack Builds.
Yeah, but I mean, you could have done it, I guess, yourself from source or whatever and been more picky.
I actually just went and looked for the source code just for Myth front end, and I couldn't find it. You either get the whole source package, and that's the complete thing, and that's what SBO's using. Oh, not SBO's. Slack Builds or whatever it is. I take it, isn't it? Yeah. So anyway, I end up installing the whole thing. But I mean, when I say installing it, it's not hard. And setting up now, back when I used to run it too, MythTV wouldn't even scan for channels. You had to go and get the DVB utilities, and I think it's called Zap, and it pulls all your frequencies out and makes a channel configuration file. And then you had to take that over and put it in MythTV and use that for your channels. Now, MythTV actually is one of the very few applications on Linux that can actually go through and scan for channels as well. Like Caffeine and that, you have to go and put in all the transponder details before you can scan for a particular channel, and you have to know all the frequencies and all that sort of stuff. You can't just click scan and off it goes. So in that respect, Linux in general has a little bit of catching up to do with Windows.
I don't like to hear that.
Yeah, you can cut that bit out. But that's the truth.
Well, one good thing is MythTV is not available on Windows.
No, that's not entirely true.
I thought it was just Linux and Mac.
No, you can get a Windows client. Now, it doesn't look pretty, but what it does, because MythTV, and I don't know what NUB is, Klaatu, you'd know more about NUB, but when you record, it's a NUV. NUV, what's NUV stand for?
I don't even know what you're saying. NOV, is that NUV?
No, NUV, I think it is. When you record MythTV, it uses a NUV file, I think it is. Like no other application can sort of read it. You can now record MP4 too. But anyway, for the Windows thing, you can get a client, so you can put this on Windows box, and then you can log on to your Myth back end box and watch the recorded programs and that. But I don't think you can record you know, you can set up recordings and all that. You can only just watch the recorded programs. But I haven't looked at that in about 3 years.
Yeah, but anyway, that's not the back end anyway, right? That's just the, you still have to have it running on Linux.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was only to watch I haven't looked at that in years.
Just a little bit more detail on the front ends and back ends. So you're saying the back end would be like a core system, and then the front ends would be like at each TV?
No, yeah, okay. With the back end is running the MySQL database. It's probably going to have all your tuner cards, etc. Now that can be a standalone box. It doesn't have to have a monitor on it or anything. It's what I suppose you want to call your media server. Then on separate boxes you can put around, you just put the front end on. And that's your pretty GUI and all that sort of stuff. Now, you could argue whether you should keep your front end separate from your back end. But to me, that's pointless, right? Because a myth box is sitting there doing nothing for most of its time anyway. It's not like you're recording TV 24 hours a day. So I have a dedicated machine sitting in my entertainment system. I just bought a nice case that goes with the plasma telly, so it doesn't look too bad. And that sits there, and that runs a front end and a back end.
But if you wanted just to say, okay, what I'm just trying to picture how to do this. Like, say I take a back end and put it out in the garage.
Yep.
Now the front ends, okay, say I have two TVs, one in the bedroom, one in the living room, and I have a front end at each one. Now these front ends are pulling the media off the one in the garage?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So the front ends won't have like a disc? They'll be discless?
Well, I can't. You probably have to go and read that, because mine don't. Mine have all discs in them, obviously.
Okay.
But you probably can set up, I can't see. No, they couldn't be, as far as I know, because you have to install MIDI front end on them.
Oh, okay.
You might be able to get away with doing it on a... there's no reason you couldn't do it on the sticks you spoke smucking around with all the time?
Yeah, the USB sticks. You could just install a really minimal... Yeah.
Or maybe you could
even do like a live CD or something if you wanted to.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure you can. You should be able to use your Bundu. You can just run it from there without a problem.
I'm looking at one right now. It's called Mini Myth. It's made just to be a front end on a USB drive. Yeah, it's called Mini Myth.
Oh, that's cool.
MiniMyth.org.
Yeah, well, that'd be the guy.
Yeah, that way you can have a nice quiet system sitting by the TV.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue that. These days you can build decent systems with, mine, I just bought the silent power supply. I have my graphics card, I think in that one is just the Enforce 6200, I think it is. It doesn't need a fan to keep it cool because it's only it suits a myth box. It does everything myth TV is ever going to need it to do and more. So it's fanless, so you don't have to worry about heat there. And mine's only AMD Athlon 3500 at the moment. When I first built the Myth box, it was an Athlon 1800. And I had absolutely no trouble with an 1800. I used to be able to record a couple of programs and stream a recorded program to one of the other front ends in the house. And from what I can recall, I never had a trouble doing it. And the only reason I've upgraded it, I've gone from an 1800 to a 2.5 to a 3.5, is because as I've updated other machines in the house, those ones go out into the lounge room. So you really don't need, really fast hardware to run a MIDI TV with several front ends operating at the same time.
That's pretty cool. So the only fans you have in there is the power supply, and that's a quiet one. Then you have one on the CPU?
Yeah, that's right. And these days, too, with what power savings, the thing ticks over. At about one gigahertz most of the time anyway, because it's sitting out there doing nothing.
Right.
And the fan, just slows down to nothing as well. So, yeah, it's pretty quiet. You wouldn't hear it.
Use that box for other things too, right?
Well, that's the other thing too, and it comes back to the argument of should you just have a dedicated back end. Well, because it's sitting there all the time and it's the machine that's on most in this house, it runs my home automation software as well, and the home security, which is that ZoneMinder. And I figured I might as well utilize this Athlon 3500 that's sitting there with Premier Grunt not actually being used that often, and run these things that I want on most of the time anyway. So, yeah, sure, you could build a machine and put it in the basement, but it a lot of the time would be doing nothing if it's purely a back end, unless you watch a hell of a lot of TV, I suppose.
Yeah, if I was going to build one, it'd probably be, you know, because I have a TiVo now, so I would want to replace it, so it would probably be a dedicated box just for that, you know, especially as much as my daughter records stuff now on the TiVo, it'd
yeah.
probably be recording nonstop.
No, I'd tell you, I'd be lost without the MIT-TV. And the beauty, there's a couple of things that we haven't talked about. Pulling the ads out of television. MIT-TV must get it right about 95% of the time now. I have not seen a commercial in the last 12 months. Very rare that I ever get to see a commercial, because after MIT-TV finishes recording, it's set up then to go through and transcode it, I suppose is what you call it, and it takes out all the commercials. It actually doesn't take them out. It goes through and marks them. And then I have it set up to skip commercials. But then if you want to archive the recording, you can go into an edit, and you can actually, it's already, when you bring up the edit line, it's got them already marked in there as red. Then you can just check them quickly if you want, and then you can tell it to transcode it and cut those sections out, so your archive becomes a lot smaller. And then you can also, depending on the quality you want, the amount of options in there when you archive it, you know, you can reduce it from I record at the high stream because I've got enough space. I figure, well, why not? There's no reason not to. But if I did want to archive something, then you can reduce it, resolution and all that sort of stuff too, to get as many shows as you want on a DVD. You know, there's all the things you can play around with MIT-TV.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
cool.
And I only know. Oh, it is. But you sit and read. And documentation for MIT also, I would have to go so far as to say, second to none. Like, looking at the other documentation on these other web pages, Alicia and that really didn't have any, I didn't think. Well, not much at all.
Yeah, the MIT documentation, like, you know how the Gen 2 documentation you can a lot of times use for other Linux distributions just because it's so good? MIT is, like, the same thing. Like, if you want to find out information about, like, video compatibility and graphic card compatibility and stuff like that, first place I hit is the MIT documentation because they're just so informative.
Yeah, and then the wiki. The wiki is exactly the same. You go over and look at the MIT wiki, and there's so much information on that. Alicia doesn't have a bad forum. I don't know how active it is, but the wiki on Alicia just says nothing. Gave me no information. Quite true. I didn't look at the Xbox Media Center documentation, actually.
I didn't either, because I didn't have to. It was so intuitive.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. I didn't need to go and look up anything except for that one problem I was having, which I found straight away an answer over in the IRC.
Yeah.
I found this one yesterday. It's called Geekbox. I guess that's how you say it. Geexbox.
Did you post it?
Yeah, it's in the IRC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a media center on a live CD or a DVD that you create yourself. Geekbox is only 16 megabytes, but it has an ISO generator, so you could take a movie, any type of movie you want, even if it's a full-featured film or your home videos, and put them on this live CD, and you can give it to anyone. and they can pop it in their computer, even if it's a Windows machine or any type of computer, they can boot up into a live CD, and the movie will start playing using M-Player.
Wow, that is really cool. Yeah, I mean, that's a really cool idea for, like, independent filmmakers, actually. You know, you're always looking for some kind of unique way to distribute your movie. That's a totally unique and cool way, and you can make it really, like, stand out, I think, if you did that. That's really cool.
And see, I had a list of the different formats. Of course, DivX, XVID, H.264, MPEG. I mean, anything you can think of, any type of format.
Yeah, it said something about, yeah, with that 32 codex. Did I read that somewhere too? Uses them. Where do I see that?
And what's cool is it only uses 16 megabytes on the disk. So on a DVD, you got what? Is it 4.6 gigs or 4.7 gigabyte?
Yeah, for a single layer.
Yeah, so I mean, the average XVID or DivX movie is only 750 megabytes.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah, so you won't have to worry about room on that disk. Yeah, I just thought I would throw that one out there. I thought it was pretty neat.
Yeah, well, it's another one for everyone to look at who want to play around with these things, isn't it?
And it looks like it's in the, I'm not 100% sure, but I think I seen it in the Ubuntu repo. So you should be able just to app get it, the ISO generator.
So what's that doing, Monster B? What are you reading about this?
Well, the ISO generator is just a software program to create the ISO that you whatever movie that you want to put on it. Let me get the.
Oh yeah, right.
You see it now?
Yeah, I found it. Sorry, I was talking to my daughter. Yeah, 2E.
Yeah.
Like you said, if you want to distribute movies.
Yeah, like Claude 2 said, you know, for like somebody that made an independent film and they want to get it out there for people to see.
Yeah, it's just a cool, unique way to do that. I mean, I guess it's not that much different than just giving someone a DVD with a movie on it. But I mean, you know, I mean, it would be really unique and stuff if you did it this way.
Yeah, it does a lot more than just that, but I just found it last night, so I haven't read too much into it. Plus, you can put a splash screen, you know, a custom one. I mean, you can really deck this thing out.
Yeah, it does menus and everything.
Yeah.
It looks pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, that sounds really... I'm going to probably look into that a little bit further. That sounds really cool. You know, what this is all kind of showing me is that, you know, Linux is fine with multimedia. It's like doing really, really well with multimedia. It's the proprietary stuff out there that don't want to play with Linux that are kind of missing out. But Linux can totally, as long as you're using, like, you know, either open or cracked codecs, you know, like whether it's, DivX isn't really open, but I guess Linux doesn't seem to have any problem playing it, for instance. But you know, as long as you're using a codec that plays with Linux, okay, Linux will totally play that stuff and then present it really, really well. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. When I first started using Linux, it was hard to watch any media, but especially if you didn't know where to go and get the legal codecs and download them and all that sort of stuff. Now with GStream and all that, well, you don't even have to get a legal one, so you can go and get legal. The only thing I reckon still is the video editing. It's the only place it's got to improve. There's a lot of home people use their computers to edit their home movies.
Yeah.
You know, and Linux just doesn't do that easy enough, I'm afraid.
Not yet. It's getting there. It'll get there. But yeah, you're right. Totally. I agree.
Say I have a DVD, and I don't... Let's see how I can put this. Say, okay, I went to a video store.
You want to archive it.
I went to a video store and rented a DVD.
Yep.
And I just found out I don't have time to watch it. Now, can I put that in there and rip it to the hard drive?
Yeah. One of the plugins is Myth Archive. So, is it called Archive? I'm not sure. But yeah, certainly you can put any DVD in there or VCD, whatever you want, and go and click on a button, and it uses transcode. You get a few options whether you want to rip the whole DVD as an ISO onto the hard drive, and that way you'll get exactly when you get to watch it, all the special features and everything. You can do, I think, a perfect copy, which is it'll just go and grab the actual movie file and nothing else, but the movie file will end up, you know, whatever size the movie is on the disc as well, you know, about 4 gig or 3 gig or whatever the actual movie is. Or you can use DivX and compress it, and I think they call that a good copy, and you'll end up with about a 1.2 gig file that's on your hard drive. And that's all done with MythStar. That uses transcode to do all that, and Mencoder, I think, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty neat, because, you know, sometimes you go to the video store and you end up with 2-3 DVDs, you know, and you can't decide on which one to get, so you get 3 of them, and then you get home and you don't have time to watch them. So I think that'd be a neat idea.
Yeah. Well, it's even good just for, like, over the years, how many DVDs have you collected? And you don't want to go to the cupboard and get it out. So all we've done here is all the DVDs, whenever I think about it, I go and chuck one in, hit a button, and off it goes and rips it to the hard drive, and then it goes back in the cupboard and I never have to see it again.
It's also really good for just stealing movies straight up, you know. You don't want to buy them, you know. You just get them and rip them and keep them illegally.
No, we're not doing that.
Oh, okay.
For convenience.
Right.
Well, here's another convenience, too. I have DirecTV, and when I buy a pay-per-view movie, I have to watch... Okay, I buy a pay-per-view movie and record it with the TiVo.
You got 24 hours to watch it?
Only if I start to watch it. Now, say I record it, and I don't watch it for a week, that's fine. It'll sit on the hard drive. But as soon as I play it, even for 10 seconds, now I have to finish it in 24 hours. And if I don't, it automatically deletes, and I still get charged for it. Now, with the Myth TV, that would fix that problem, right?
How are you getting... Yeah, so I don't understand any of that stuff because we don't have it. But what, there's a decoder... You have a decoder box, is it?
Yeah.
How do you get that signal into your house? Is it... Cable, satellite? What?
Well, it's a satellite, and it's got the coax that runs to the TiVo.
The gas.
Yeah, and then from the TiVo,
it goes with
the S cable to the TV. Telly.
Well, I take it that would be no different to me with my satellite TV having a decoder box, and from the decoder box, I have that going, obviously, to the telly, but also I have through a... composite out, it goes into the back of the Myth box, and I just can record anything on the satellite telly as well. So it would be exactly the same for you.
Oh, okay, so that would
solve. You can play that movie to the. Yeah, as long as it depends on the outputs on the back of that TiVo, I suppose. Have you just got your normal S video and component and whatever?
Yeah, it's just got the normal. Just a normal output.
As long as you've got a way to get it into your as long as you've got a way to get it into your Myth box.
Right, you need a special capture card.
Yeah, well, see, my digital TV tuner cards have got S video and, you know, your typical ones are composite in. And then I just have another one going into the sound card, into the line in to get the sound in there. But also what you'd have to set up, if you really want to record, which I don't, you'd have to set up an infrared blaster. Say I got my satellite TV on Discovery Channel, and then I want to record something at 2 o'clock tomorrow morning on National Geographic Channel, well, then you'd need Myth TV to be able to use an infrared blaster to change the channel on your satellite box at 3 o'clock in the morning, to put on National Geographic Channel so it can start recording that program you want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to be able to change the satellite or your TiVo's channel if you want to record your TiVo's. Well, obviously your TiVo records, but you know what I mean, a satellite or whatever TV,
right.
You need one of those infrared blasters, which I've never bothered setting up. but it's certainly easy enough to do.
Well, I think we covered a lot of them. Do you have any more? The only ones that I can think of, which is really not a media center, but what kind of is that Miro? That's more just for your computer.
Yeah, Miro, Miro.
Yeah.
Democracy Player, as it used to be called. I always did like that, really. I did, because it shows, you know, I mean, I think, and this could just be me. Well, it's not just me, but it's you know, there's a theory that a lot of the entertainment is just going to be, you know, completely delivered and centered around the computer. And so Miro kind of helps shift the mindset to that, where instead of watching TV shows, you're watching, like, video casts, you know, like Hack 5 and Pure Ownage or Pure, you know, that show about gaming. So, I mean, it's kind of cool, but I don't know how practical it is because I don't know how many people really, really watch that much online content, but I did like it.
Well, I found out because I installed it just to mess around with it, and they had some, like, all, you know, stuff that was already in there, and I had no idea that Linux Journal had a video cast.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of video casts out there that, yeah, you're right, you don't even know about until someone, like, collects it into a little channel for you, and then you've got them all right there. That's why I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
And you know what? Another good thing that kind of player's good for is just, like, if you're telling friends to watch something that you've gotten, and maybe it's an OGG file or something that they're, you know, if they're using PC or Mac and they can't play it easily, you can refer to them, like, to Miro or something like that, and that not only gets them into independent media and stuff like that, it also enables them to play, like, a lot of different formats that they may not have even known existed.
Right. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, it all depends on where you're getting the videos from, but, like, the YouTube videos, they really didn't look that great because they were stretched out and they were all grainy, but some of the content was pretty good. The stuff that's, like, you know, from Hack 5 and was it Cranky Geeks and Linux Journal? All those looked really nice. Plus, you can go full screen.
Yeah.
You could play something like this on your TV with Myth TV, couldn't you?
I'm sure you could. I mean, I don't see why not. Whatever that web, some kind of web plug-in, I'm sure it would totally play on your television.
Well, we've been talking for over an hour. What do you think? You want to end it here?
Yeah, I think we've pretty well covered it all. And if anyone wants more information, they can refer to the links. And no doubt we'll see you next time.
All righty. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HDR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.